myself, I was born and raised in Madison. I got a psychology degree from the University of Wisconsin many moons ago, and then proceeded to go to Alaska and work on the Alaska pipeline, where I needed every bit of that psychology degree. My husband got sick, and I decided I needed to go back to school, so we moved to be nearer to his family in South Dakota. We had two kids by that time, and I went to pharmacy school there, and then I worked for a couple of years in retail, and then I went back and got a doctorate in pharmacy because I just wanted to learn more. And after I got that, I worked for the founder, Santi Sue, as a diabetes educator for a year, and then I moved to Madison and moved into my old home and began working with Women's International Pharmacy. And I've loved it ever since. I've been there 15 years. Women's International Pharmacy specializes in compounding bioidentical hormone replacement therapy for men and women. Unlike off-the-shelf medication prescriptions, these are compounded to meet specific needs of the patient, and it's directed by the practitioner and the patient. Either the patient goes in and say, I've read about this, can I try it? Or the practitioner knows quite a bit. I guess it's probably difficult to find a good practitioner. That's a big problem. So we do have doctor referral lists that, and in the packet, if you got a packet, if there's some over there, if you came in late and didn't get them, there is a list which I'll go over later, and if you want a doctor referral list, you can just put that on there. And then I'm going to take these forms back to the company, and then they will mail you or email you. Whatever kind of information you wanted to have. We've been compounding for 30 years, and our mission statement is we care. We try to provide all kinds of information to people, not necessarily just about what we sell, but I've been a lifelong proponent of alternative medicine with a particular interest in bioidentical hormones and holistic health. So if you want to know more about us, you can go to our website, and I'm sure it's in the packet, womensinternational.com. And we have a wonderful educational resource department that provides all kinds of information. I'll direct you to a quote on the handout, the outline, from Andrew Still, who is the father of osteopathy. And are you familiar with osteopaths? They're like MDs. They have all the privileges that MDs have, but they concentrate more on the musculoskeletal system and alternative health. There are some in Madison, but they tend to, in my opinion, be a little notch up above the general practitioner just because they're alternative leaning. And he maintained that man should study and use drugs compounded in his own body. And I think what he means by this is that if possible, and if you're going to use a drug, try to see what it is naturally in your body that would have taken care of this condition. And then try to use that. That would be your first choice. Although I know with Lyme, you don't have much of a choice as far. I mean, I know there's big antibiotic regimen. I read a little bit about it, but I can't remember it all. It's so complicated, actually. I just have always liked that quote. And then the second thing I'd like to bring your attention, well, it's not in here, but is a quote by Susan Rako. She wrote The Hormone of Desire, and she was talking about testosterone for women. She was one of the first female doctors to write about testosterone for women. And I'm going to paraphrase her. She said, the truth is that there is no substitute for your patient and individual attention to details of the way your body responds to things. So I am a huge believer of writing everything down. And I have a calendar, a monthly calendar, so I can see the whole month at once. And if I have a symptom that I'd like to take care of, you kind of think, okay, how is the symptom manifesting itself? And then if you start or stop supplements, start or stop antibiotics, different acupuncture, whatever you're doing, does it make it better? Does it make it worse? You know. So if you pay attention to things like that, and I don't mean to preach to you, because maybe you're already doing this, sometimes there'll be a light, you know, that comes on that you'll realize things that you hadn't realized before that are affecting your health. So I'm originally just going to go through how many people here know anything about hormones in general? Okay, so I don't want to talk down to you, but I'm going to just quickly go through the first couple sheets. Synthetic hormone replacement therapy is our manufacturing drugs like Premarin, Provera, Estonia, Estradiol, et cetera. Natural bioidentical hormones have the same chemical structure as the hormones made in our own body. More and more, manufacturers of drugs are making bioidentical hormones. It's kind of misleading. We have a chart in here that gives all the manufactured hormones, whether they're bioidentical or not, and then the different things that we compound. So sometimes patients will go to the doctors and the doctor will say, I'll put you on a patch, and they'll say, oh, well, that's not bioidentical, I want a compound. But truly, if you can get your doctor even to authorize a bioidentical manufacturing drug, you're better than if they're not going to go the compounded route. In general, chronic inflammation is the cause and effect of the diseases of aging and indeed of most illnesses. Balancing hormones, including progesterone, and optimizing hormone levels reduce inflammation. It's the final touch on other things such as lifestyle factors like nutrition, exercise, meditation, nutraceuticals. I would put in here things like acupuncture, any other kinds of alternative things that you may engage in. And this quote from Dr. Rothenberg, we age because our hormones decline, our hormones don't decline because we age. Now, you have to pardon me, but I work with many menopausal women, so it's not going to fit all of your, you look like most a lot of us are on the younger side, not me included, but some of the things I have learned have been working with postmenopausal women. Treating mild hormone deficiencies dramatically improves the quality of a person's life. Bioidentical hormones to optimize are, and there's a list of them, progesterone, estrogen, DHEA, testosterone, hydrocortisone, thyroid, pregnenolone, melatonin, vitamin D. I'm not going to go through each of those now, but I will be speaking about all of them during the course of this talk. The talk is a little long, so I hope. Benefits of bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, it reduces inflammation, treats deficiencies, improves quality of life. And there are all your hormone deficiency symptoms if you want to look at it. Some of them, I'm sure, correspond to Lyme disease symptoms, irritability, depression, anger, difficulty in focusing, poor sleep, painful breaths, swollen hands, hair loss, headaches, fatigue, hot flashes, it's painful, and stiff joints. And so there's a few more I skipped, but the benefits of treating hormone deficiency are healthier sleep, better energy levels, progesterone in particular is calming and helps with anxiety, healthy fat metabolism, improves skin quality and increased metabolic rate, reduces depression, helps with fertility, breast cancer protective, it's heart and neuroprotective, although the studies yet have failed to determine the dose. There is a thought that about 20% of the population are genetically predisposed so that estradiol will help raise their good cholesterol. But it's only 20%. And they're doing studies now to try to determine how many people would be helped by hormones for the heart and how many people will be helped in the brain by hormones and enhanced libido. So again, good practitioner is very important to find bioidentical hormone optimization. You get a physical exam, you look at your signs and symptoms, how do you feel? Lab testing, it says here the optimal range is the upper third of the reference range. However, I have been listening to Dr. Frank Schallenberger, and he is an MD out of Carson City, Nevada. And he presented in February at the American Academy of Ozone Therapy Conference in Houston. And ozone therapy is big right now as an alternative therapy. It's much more widely practiced in Europe, as Alicia was telling me earlier. But it's catching on with a few doctors in this country, but they're few and far between. There is Dr. David Minkoff, I listened to him. He is in Florida. Dr. Schallenberger has a big clinic treating Lyme patients, but he's in Nevada. So any of you have relatives there, I'm sure it's expensive, but like he says, well, if you take a trip to the emergency room, that's expensive too, So But he says hormone tests are pretty worthless. What he says is that get a baseline of your hormones. Good to get a baseline when it's young. Both of my children in their 20s had baseline hormones done. And good to do it if you're still menstruating at about the 21st day of the cycle. That's probably the best time to get it done, because that's around when progesterone peaks. Some doctors know how to utilize saliva and blood because they have a lot of patients, but it doesn't point to a dose for you. You can be low in hormones, but it's not going to say for you as a person what the dose is that's going to best help you. So that's where a good practitioner comes in. And trial and error, Dr. Schallenberger says, you look at the clinical symptoms, you do a clinical trial of one. We start you on something, give it some time. If it works, that's great, you needed it. If it doesn't work, we'll move on to something else and we'll change the dose. So pretty pragmatic approach there. So on the other side of this, there is a hormone chart. And I don't mean to scare you with this chart. What I just wanted to do is try to explain that the hormone cascade is very complicated. First of all hormones are made from cholesterol. So without cholesterol, you don't make hormones. And there's a thought that the reason why people get high cholesterol in later life is their body doesn't make hormones, and the body is sending a signal back to make more cholesterol so that the body can make more hormones. But it doesn't work that way because the inability to make the hormones is decreased. Cholesterol converts to pregnenolone, the mother hormone, and that's been known to help with alertness and fatigue. It helps improve mood and decreases anxiety, improves memory, helps with rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis, and it's good for the skin. Now, who knows if that's because it converts to other things that help, or whether pregnenolone itself helps with that. Now, there's two ways the hormones can convert. They can go down the pathway to cortisol, hydrocortisone, which I'm going to talk about a lot. They can also, pregnenolone can also go to DHEA over here, which is a precursor hormone to testosterone. So DHEA converts to testosterone, or it converts onto the estrogens, and then so does testosterone converts to the estrogens. I wouldn't pay too much attention to the intermediaries. It's almost impossible to even pronounce their names, so I wouldn't worry about them. But each of these chemical reactions and conversions are governed by your genetics, and we don't know enough about that. So you may shunt pregnenolone one way versus the other way. We may want it to go to DHEA and because that's where you need it, and it may go down to cortisol instead, which you may also need. But more and more genetic testing is being done. Hopefully in the next couple of years they'll be able to do more hormonal genetic testing. And then these reactions are governed by enzymes, and they are governed by cofactors, and the cofactors are your vitamins and minerals. So in order to have good conversion to the other hormones, you need to have good nutrition, your vitamins, the B vitamins particularly, and magnesium particularly, are big ones for hormone conversion, this cascade. So. I put this chart in here just for the younger women, just because it tells you what part of the menstrual cycle the hormones increase and decrease at. So just a basic primer, and you probably all know this. Estrogen, progesterone are low at the beginning of the menstrual cycle. Estrogen peaks at ovulation about day 14, and I read that testosterone peaks at the same time. And progesterone, and then it drops off. There's a little blip here, and then it drops off further. Progesterone starts out low, and it goes all the way over here to ovulation, and then it increases. It doesn't increase quite as dramatically and quite the peak, but it increases until it plateaus about looks like 24 to about day 28, 27, 28, and then it drops off. So estrogen builds up the uterine lining, and progesterone keeps that lining in place until an egg implants. If a fertilized egg does not implant, progesterone drops off, and then you shed the lining, and then we start all over again. So that's it in a nutshell. Okay, No. Down to the juicy part. So I approached this talk by just asking Alicia, what are the main symptoms that Lyme disease patients have? She named four, fatigue and sleep problems, pain, and then cognitive dysfunction. So I started out by reading a book by Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. He's the author of The Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution. Have you, anybody ever read that? Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution. It is over there on the table, and it is a great book. I would definitely recommend it. It offers a lot of hope, and I think sometimes hope is hard to come by. He says that he's been treating people with Lyme disease for years, decades. So he says 12 to 24 million Americans suffer from fatigue or fatigue and fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. It's interesting because in February of this year, the Institute of Medicine decided that they wanted to rename chronic fatigue syndrome to, well, I don't know if it's, it had been kind of renamed to MECFS, but now they want to rename it to systemic exertion intolerance disease. Has anyone ever, they say that is the hallmark of chronic fatigue, is that when the inability to tolerate either physical and or cognitive or mental exertion. And then, so it was given an alternative name of this myelogic encephaloma myelitis, a mouthful, ME, and that was a brain and spinal cord inflammation. But some of the practitioners like that, oh, it had muscle pain with it too, because it seemed to show that it was actually a physical malady, that there was a physical reason for chronic fatigue. But the experts say they want to name it, rename it. I don't know if it'll catch on or not. I'm going to continue to call it chronic fatigue or just fatigue here.
What was the fourth symptom of the four?
Cognitive dysfunction.
There was another one in there.
Pain. Insomnia. Yeah. And it's actually listed on the handout too. I moved, by the way, I've changed the handout around a little bit, the outline, because I had to do this before I actually prepared this talk. So there are certain things that didn't flow as well. Let's see. So, a key component of chronic fatigue is what we call mitochondrial dysfunction. Now that's a mouthful. Has anyone in here heard of mitochondrial dysfunction? Okay, all right, I'm going to concentrate that. It's on this dysfunction. It's a disorder which has been studied since the 60s and is currently receiving a lot more attention because they're able to measure it. And they've noticed that there are many different types of diseases where people all have mitochondrial dysfunction. So let me tell you what it is. The mitochondria are small biologic structures within each cell. There can be a few of them in a cell or many of them, and they produce energy. So they are your basic energy producing organelles, they call them, within the cell. They take food, they combine it with oxygen, which combines with one or more vitamins and minerals within the cell, so to ignite energy production. So food is important, the catalysts are the vitamins and minerals, and then oxygen is important. And that's what causes energy. So lack of cell energy has been associated with all kinds of conditions: autism, chronic fatigue, diabetes, fibromyalgia, Lyme, heart disease, low thyroid, MS, and obesity. Drugs, environmental toxins, and insulin resistance can trigger mitochondrial dysfunction, while thyroid hormones are known to enhance energy production in the skeletal muscle cells. Energy production is definitely compromised in people with hypothyroidism, so, which I'm sure some of you are aware. Dr. Frank Schallenberger, who I'm going to mention quite a bit, he says that thyroid is the single most undertreated hormone deficiency in this country, followed closely by hydrocortisone, and I'll address that a little later. He says that the number of energy-producing cells, the mitochondria, in the body is controlled directly by the thyroid hormone, T3, actually. So low T3, low mitochondria, low energy. And he believes that 90% of low thyroid cases are go undiagnosed. Besides low thyroid hormones, what else destroys the mitochondria? Well, there's a laundry list of medications, toxins, pollutants, mercury and lead, poor nutrition, sugar, you know, lack of vitamins and minerals, the wrong types of fats, and even a study showed that a diet high in fish oil, now this was a rat study, actually rejuvenated mitochondria in the liver, so that the high fish oil fat diet was good for rats. And I think it's been shown in people too, but I'm not sure if the mitochondria has been measured in people as far as fish oil goes. There are some diseases that have a lot of mitochondrial damage, and you know, this affliction is pervasive, you know, among many, many different disorders. Diabetes, cancer, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, you know, exercise intolerance, fatigue, all heart problems, all kinds of different disorders. It's caused by medications. It's caused by anti-inflammatories, heart medicines, antidepressants, anxiety, cancer meds, HIV meds, diabetes meds, and the list just goes on and on, and unfortunately by antibiotics. So that's unfortunate, because I know there is patients take a lot of antibiotics in the course of their
care. Most medications.
Yeah, most medications cause mitochondrial dysfunction. Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of discouraging in a way, but I'm going to tell you what to do about it, and so is Dr. Teitelbaum. He's going to tell you how to protect against it. In fact, many drugs that are rejected by the Food and Drug Administration are actually rejected. They never come to market because they cause destruction of these energy cells. So it becomes a vicious cycle. Damaged cells need energy. Well, let me tell you first how the cells get damaged. So damage occurs within the mitochondria because they're constantly dying and growing and using food and energy and that. And there's byproducts of this process within each cell, and the byproducts have to be cleared out. But if something interferes with the clearing out of all this activity, then the cell starts to die. And when you start killing the energy cells, it becomes a double whammy, because the cells need energy to heal, but there is no energy to heal. So it's fatigue begets fatigue, so to speak. Now I'm going to go on to hormonal support. I want to elaborate further on the hormones, because that's my specialty. We've already touched on the importance of T3, because it increases the number of mitochondrial cells. Every cell in the body has receptors for thyroid hormone. It's the principal hormone that orchestrates metabolism. Are you familiar with the side effects of low thyroid? Do I want to go through them, or do you?
Go ahead.
Okay. Fatigue, dry skin, hair loss, water retention, heat and cold intolerance, constipation, poor memory, indigestion, muscle joint pain. Diabetics, alcoholics, and cancer patients are most likely hypothyroid, and people with high cholesterol are also most likely hypothyroid. The trouble is testing for it, because the TSH test is a thyroid stimulating hormone, and it is pretty inaccurate. It doesn't measure how the thyroid hormone is actually working at the receptor site. It just tells you if you're stimulating enough thyroid hormone in your body. So doctors have missed a lot of low thyroid patients by just measuring TSH. In fact, Dr. Schallenberger says if you have any of these symptoms, you have to find a good doctor who's willing to treat you anyway without the lab work to support it. If you feel better with thyroid, then it's proof that you needed thyroid. And so really, number one, as far as mitochondrial dysfunction is, try to, if you have some of these low thyroid symptoms, try to get help for it. On this sheet from our educational branch, we have wonderful newsletters. So at the end of the program, you can fill this out and check what you would like to receive, and we'll mail them to you, or we'll email them to you. And there is a wonderful newsletter on thyroid here that goes into much greater depth.
I have a question. Is there another test better than TSH that, or is that?
Well, some measure T3, which is the hormone that's needed for the increasing of the mitochondrial T3 cells. T3 is the active thyroid hormone. T4 is the inactive. T4, even when you're low thyroid by the test, doctors will give you T4. They are expecting it, but that's inactive. They're expecting it to convert down to T3, the active hormone. But many cases, if you're missing the nutrients that it's required to convert it to T3, you're not going to convert it. So you have a lot of inactive thyroid and you still feel terrible. So measuring T3 and T4 are probably a good thing. Measuring thyroid antibodies, if you have chronic diffuse musculoskeletal pain, that has been attributed to antibodies that the body is actually attacking the thyroid itself, and so you could get your antibodies measured. I believe it's Schallenberger said in that case you wouldn't want to use any desiccated pork thyroid. So I don't know how many are on thyroid, but many are on a glandular pork thyroid because the hormones in the porcine gland are identical to the hormones. The T3 and the T4 are the identical structure of human thyroid hormones. And that was the original thyroid treatment decades ago, probably in the 20s and the 30s, where doctors would grind up a pig thyroid gland and take it in their little black bag to, you know, whoever they were visiting. And, that was the original thyroid replacement in this country. Oh yeah, the pig thyroid gland is very effective for people.
Yeah, is this just kind of an intuitive thing a doctor does, or?
They did do it. They don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know how it was first developed, to tell you the truth. I mean, they had to rely on what they had in nature. They had to rely on the herbs and the plants and that kind of thing. They just didn't have a lot of pharmaceuticals.
When did they go to synthetic?
Oh, I don't know exactly, but I would say, I don't know, 50s with the, you know, I think with the onset of the antibiotic era, probably, you know, probably the 40s, the 50s, maybe, and then it just mushroomed, you know, in the
synthetic is not as effective as the...
All thyroid hormone on the marketplace is bioidentical. So the T4 is human thyroid, and the T3 that exists as a brand name Cytomel, that is also human thyroid. So I can't say that they're less effective, but what I'm saying is that this T4 is inactive, and so many times that's not effective. It's bioidentical, but it's not as effective unless the body converts it to the active thyroid hormone. So we can talk about that later if you want. Yes.
More about the thyroid, I won't ask more about it here, but
okay.
For instance, the Synthroid versus NDGs, is that going to be in those newsletters that would be sent out?
Yes. Well, and the Synthroid, of course, is bioidentical, so we don't, when someone calls and there says they're on Synthroid, it's bioidentical, so we're okay with it. But if you are on Synthroid and you're still having symptoms, then you need to look at getting some T3 to go along with the T4. So it's got to make you feel better, and if it doesn't make you feel better, then something is not right.
Probably makes you feel worse.
Makes you feel worse, something is, definitely not right, and you've got to explore other. Now, the other thing is, it's very important to treat the adrenals. In fact, some of these doctors actually feel that the adrenals need to be treated first, because what happens is if you give a lot of thyroid and the person's adrenal glands are not able to pump out, so thyroid revs up the metabolism. But if your adrenal glands is not able to sustain that metabolism, then you're going to crash. You know, you're going to get heart palpitations, you're going to get jittery, even at low doses of thyroid. So really, adrenals.
So you can take the Synthroid and have a negative reaction, but that doesn't mean it isn't the thyroid. It's still gonna be the thyroid, it's just not being properly treated.
That's right. You have to either look at adding some T3. You can go to a pork thyroid. There are very good products manufactured out there that are desiccated pork thyroid, which have both the T4 and the T3 in it. Or you look at your adrenals and see if you maybe need a little bit of hydrocortisone. And I'm going to talk about adrenals in a minute. It's complicated. So now let's turn our attention to estradiol. It's the most potent female estrogen, and testosterone is the most potent male estrogen. Both men and women produce and need both of these hormones. A recent study showed that there are benefits for men to taking estradiol. So estradiol in a man is not all bad. It's all in how much. You know, if you have too much estradiol in a man, that's not good. If you have too much testosterone in a woman, that's not good.